going up.
Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices and give you a 5-year price guarantee on talk, text, and data. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to Jeffrey Wright and Company. My name is Jeffrey Wright. You can follow me on Twitter, on X, at JWright929ESPN. As always, you can listen on the radio, dial 929 FM, 680 AM. But if you're away from the radio and you want to stay up to date with everything happening here at the station, you can do so by downloading the Odyssey app. Free to download, free to listen, stream anywhere, anytime. You can even listen on demand. George Ruggiero is the producer of the program. You can follow him on Twitter, on X, at KingGeorge94. George, good day, sir.
Good day to you.
Do we have draft content you want to plug?
I do not. No.
Okay. All right.
Just wanted
to make sure. Okay. So also, it's Thursday, so that means I welcome the man that writes about college football, college basketball for CBS Sports. Follow him on Twitter, on X, at David W. Cobb. Let me mute myself there. Cobb, good day, sir.
Good day, Jeffrey. I appreciate the interruption here that you're providing me from paternity leave. Daddy daycare is in full swing, so nice to get away for a few minutes.
Yeah, it is amazing how much just the extra set of hands makes it easier. Like the two is better than one. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder like how my mom did it, like with three boys. Now, granted, two of us are. Me and my middle brother were 22 months apart, and then my youngest brother's 9 years younger. So there was like a gap. But that was, a lot going around, a lot to keep up with. So let's everybody, we got coming up on the program. We got Grizzlies tonight. Hooray. Cobb and I, there are some interesting things that I want to discuss with Cobb. It's also NFL draft night. As kind of admittedly a draft guy, this one's not doing it for me, so I kind of wanted to talk through that. Of course, the Titans have the number one overall pick. Cobb had a fascinating question of, if you take away Steve McNair, who's the franchise's best quarterback? I think you have to separate it, right? Because the answer is obviously Warren Moon, but Warren Moon's a Houston Oiler.
Yeah, it can't be Warren Moon, but if it's not Warren Moon and it's not Steve McNair, who's completing that Mount Rushmore of Tennessee Titans quarterbacks?
Yeah, and it definitely becomes like a question of like peak value versus like, I think the answer has to be Tannehill.
Well, the fact that like Marcus Mariota might even be a part of the discussion is pretty disturbing.
I would imagine he's the only person on the list that has completed a touchdown pass to himself.
Probably
in a playoff game, no less.
There aren't many quarterbacks who have done that, period. So we might be sleeping and disrespecting Marcus Mariota.
Yeah. So we'll talk a little draft here in a bit. Eric Hasselstein going to join the program, of course, tonight, late night, 8:30 start. Pregame will be right here on 92.9 FM ESPN at 8 p.m. Then Eric will have tip-off at 8:30. We'll get into the list, Tiger basketball, a little bit of recruiting news coming out. We'll discuss that. Also, I want to get Cobb's thoughts on the lack of settlement in the House versus NCAA I guess lawsuit? I don't think it's like a, yeah, it's a lawsuit, right?
Yeah, you can call it a saga at this point. I think a non-legal term, the saga.
There's a lot of questions I want to sort through with Cobb that I don't even know if we have the capacity to sort through them. But let's start.
You went to Pepperdine, Jeffrey. You have the capacity.
Well, no, I think the reality is, I think what you're watching is smart people can't even figure this out. Because in the end, what they're trying to do is how do we basically make a professional model under the constraints that we have of not being professionals?
Yeah, it's tougher than it looks.
Right. I mean, basically, like, what they're trying to do is privatize something that is public.
Yep. And at the end of the day, even if the terms of the House settlement go through, they'll probably still need congressional antitrust legislation to keep the parameters of that settlement in place.
So we'll get into that during hour number two. But I think let's start with the Grizzlies, because, you know, at a certain point, there is the don't take the playoffs for granted. I acknowledge that. I'm also someone who's on the record of, I think it's also really dumb how the NBA is the one sport where if you decide in one moment in time that you're not a true title contender, it's, what are we doing here? Blow it up. Like, I believe there is value in being good and consistently being good. Now, I think what the argument I would make, though, is I think you need to be good and you need to be able to be competitive in the playoffs. And so that's the real question for me. I'll ask you this. If they were playing anybody else in this series, do you think they would be competitive?
Yeah, I think if they were, yes, actually, yes. I think the Thunder are just that good. I think if they had beaten Golden State, and that was a great game, they had a shot to do it. I think they'd be competitive with the Houston Rockets right now. I mean, that series is tied 1-1. Granted, the Rockets benefited tremendously from the fact that Jimmy Butler got undercut last night and fell on his tailbone. So that could change the entire complexion of that series and the way we look at it. But
total, I think 100% that is getting. Now, I do think the way they were playing last night, that the Rockets were going to split, but you and I have seen this. The Warriors, when they're on the road, they just try to flip game one, and then they have home court. So
just look at this regular season and the way the Grizzlies did beat Houston. I mean, they beat Golden State, right, in the regular season, pre-Jimmy anyway.
Pre-Jimmy, yeah, that was like one of the more fun nights of the year.
It was one that you have to cling to if you're going to find any joy from this season. So yes, absolutely. I think pretty much any other team in the West, I'd think the Grizzlies could at least push it to six. I don't know that I would have predicted them to beat Houston in a 7-game series, but absolutely they would have been more competitive on the road. I'd feel pretty good about, hey, if we win tonight, like, you know, we're going to have a chance in this thing. But there's nobody in this city, there's nobody in this country, there's nobody on this planet that thinks the Grizzlies are going to win tonight and then suddenly make this thing a series.
The reason why I ask that is, I do think I don't want them going in the off season and solely making decisions based on this series, because I think this series, like, you did this to yourself. You did not take the regular season seriously enough, and so you found your way in a logjam in the West, and you played your way into the play-in, and then therefore you played your way into this matchup, which everybody knew was going to be a bad matchup, period. We've seen it all year. This team still hasn't beaten the Thunder. I agree with you, like, because if you look at it, yeah, it was a Friday night game, regular season, but it's like the Grizzlies were right there with the Nuggets. I mean, they were competitive with the Nuggets. They've been competitive with the Lakers. I don't think they would be competitive with the Clippers, but I think that that's a matchup problem. I don't necessarily think, anytime you're in the playoffs, I think there's certain teams you want to avoid because stylistically, it's not a good matchup for you. I'd put the Clippers in that. So I do think the larger question for me is, what is the appropriate way to react to what we're watching?
Can I couch it with this? I think it can depend based on what OKC does from here.
I do think that matters, but I guess I'm operating. I have no problem believing that I think the Thunder are Boston last year. Like, I don't think any of this is a fluke. I think their depth is unbelievable. I mean, I was thinking about it like this. I know he wasn't as good in game two, or maybe didn't stand out in game two, but Aaron Wiggins is about the 10th man on Oklahoma City right now. And I think if he were on the Grizzlies, he'd be their fourth option.
Yeah, it's crazy the amount of depth and the roster that Sam Presti has put together. It's awesome. If they go out and beat everybody, and let's say they win the NBA Finals having never even been pushed to a seventh game, and they run through the West with a bunch of 4-0, 4-1 series victories, then I actually think that gives the Grizzlies front office license to, like, oh, see, we were no different than anybody else. We just ran into a buzzsaw, right? Like, it kind of lets them off the hook a little bit. I don't know if I love that, because I think at the end of the day, like, there's been so many issues that have been laid bare by this Oklahoma City team and by the general direction of the franchise over the last 6 weeks of the regular season, that it would almost give them a cop out if Oklahoma City was just this dominant and just crushed everybody. It would almost give Zach Kleiman and that crew, and maybe even Robert Parra, the ability to say, Oklahoma City, they were just historically dominant. Nothing we could do. We're going to run it back next year. You know, see you guys at the forum, right? Like, I think that would be kind of lame. But I think it could happen. Like, OKC is that good to where they could sort of create that narrative.
Yeah, you can talk me into, hey, if they run up against Boston and Cleveland, they could have problems. But I think it's entirely possible this team goes like 12-2, 12-3 in the Western Conference.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, I will say, though, like, the rest of the West – it's going to be, like, pretty entertaining. Like, it looks like outside of this Memphis-Oklahoma City series, like, the other three series are all tied 1-1 right now. So, like, I think it's going to be a pretty good ride, but that's only going to help the Thunder if, like, let's say Denver and the Clippers go to seven games. You know, I mean, maybe there's a whole deal of you have a week off after you sweep Memphis. Like, maybe that hurts you a little bit in game one.
Rest versus rust.
Yeah, that could be a real narrative, but I mean, there's a chance that, you know, they could go into the Western Conference Finals having played, you know, let's say 9 games or something, whereas whoever they play in the Western Conference Finals may have played 13. Could be a big, big edge there for OKC.
Yeah, I mean, especially when you consider, if I say pick one of these remaining Western Conference series to go 7, I think the one you're picking, right, is Clippers-Nuggets, because we've seen an overtime game and we've seen a 3-point game. Like, those teams seem to be evenly matched.
Yeah. Yeah, I also worry about L.A., though, with just the age of the average age of their roster. Like, are they built to go?
I don't know.
Because,
like,
7-game,
I mean, that's kind of my other thing is, historically, Harden gets worse as the series goes on. Because I'm sitting here, I took the flyer on, all right, the Thunder's price was, despite the fact that I thought the Thunder were the best team, the price to win the West was not worth it to me. And so I took a flyer. I was like, I think the Clippers are the second best team. So I took a flyer on them at 10-1. But I'm sitting here going, like, man, you had the game. You get the Kawhi game and they win it. Kawhi was awesome in game two. Like, that was something to watch. But Harden was pretty damn good in game one and they couldn't get the win. I do kind of find myself going, like, is that going to bite them? But then, like, I don't know. You can't really psychologically do that, because what if they win game one? Does Denver come out differently? Like, you know, there's a psychological element of, like, once you get the split, is the job done? But I kind of think when Minnesota gets back home, like, I think they're going to kind of put it on the Lakers. I know the Lakers had a pretty good adjustment offensively, or I should say defensively, for Ant, but I still think that they have a real problem inside. And so I kind of think Minnesota's still going to win that. And then, I mean, the Jimmy Butler thing just kind of overhangs everything in that series. So I guess, though, the reason why I'm saying that is, if, like, let's think about it in these terms, because you point out, could this, if the Thunder go on a roll, could that give the Grizzlies brass cover? It could. I still think the bigger issue is, okay, let's say you decided you did want to shake it up. How would you go about it? Because I would still be surprised, not stunned, but surprised, if one of the big three gets moved. I still don't think they're ready to do that. I don't think anything that will happen this series probably would be ready to do that. I do leave open the possibility of, you never know who becomes available. And I also leave open the possibility, let's say Jaren does make third team All-NBA and contract talks stall. Because while the Grizzlies could offer the Supermax, they don't have to. And so let's say like Jaren's number and your number don't line up. I can envision a scenario where that falls apart and you just decide, all right, we're going to move him with a year left and he'll have better value. I would still be very surprised by that. And I would also be actually opposed to that, primarily because I know Jaren's under a lot of fire right now. Show me somebody else on the roster that plays and plays significantly that actually is a difference maker on the defensive end. And that's a huge problem that I have with this team.
Yeah, Jaren is certainly the best defensive player on the team, and by a large margin. There's nobody that
I mean, I don't even
close.
Know who is second. I mean, are we saying it's Wells?
Like currently or in general?
Of guys that could be back next year, are we saying Wells is second? Are we saying if Vince were healthy, Vince would be second?
Is it bad that I think Wells and BC are probably my answer?
And then BC, who knows? He avoided surgery with injections. I don't know how you feel about that, but that doesn't exactly make me feel better.
Well, and the other thing about that is Brandon Clark's probably your, outside of your big three, he's your biggest contract on the books for next season. So in terms of a trade asset, or if you want to bring something back of value in a trade, like say you wanted to send out a couple of future draft picks and one of your salaries to get something that could help you, right? Like Brandon Clark's salary is probably the one you're looking at. Well, you're going to, you know, the fact that he's already had an Achilles issue and is now going to be coming back from injury once again, that it makes him hard to move. So, like, if you're going to make a big swing, how do you do it without trading one of the big three? Like, how do you realistically make this franchise, this team better for 25-26 with the salaries that you have on the books, with the draft picks that you have? Like, I don't even know how to do that. Like, Zach Kleiman, like, he's done some good things, but man, he's backed into a corner here. Like, there's just not a lot to play with, a lot of ability to go out there and like make the sort of move that gets this the positive momentum back. Like, I just don't know where this franchise turns to get the positive momentum back.
No, because I agree with you. I think that's a huge part of this offseason is you got to give the fans right now, and I said this because I really do believe, like, there's a lot of people like, oh, everyone's just so negative about this team. I think fans are begging for a reason to have hope. Like, I laid it out with, think about just in the last 2 months, how we started moving the goalposts just for ourselves, just to try to, like, make it, all right, well, you're not the Thunder, but still finish second in the West. Well, then that drops into, all right, third's fine. Like, you get the 3-6, you're home. Then it comes into, well, 4-5, you know, it's close. Like, yeah, you got to play Oklahoma City in the second round, but maybe if you win a first-round series, like, that'd be worth it to avoid the play-in. Then you get into the play-in, and basically it becomes, well, just beat OKC and play Houston. Like, that could be fun. Like, I think fans are actually begging for some, just give us something to hope for, and this team has not delivered. Now, I don't necessarily know if it's fair in this series to say, like, I don't know. I think they could try all they want, and it's not going to matter in this series. I think that's how wide the gap is. But if indeed, like, if our suspicion's correct, which is it's not that necessarily they don't want to make a move, they may not be able to make a move, a significant move this summer. Would it be enough to excite people if you made a real coaching, like, you end up not giving the gig to Tuomas and you do a real coaching search? Like, is
I almost
that-
think you have to. I almost think you have to, because if you wanted him to be the guy, you've set him up to fail. You gave him the hardest possible, like, test scenario to go out there and prove himself down the stretch, fighting for seeding. Never been an NBA head coach before, but, oh, yeah, we need you to go out here and lead our team to some very crucial victories so we can avoid the play-in. Oh, we didn't get that done. Well, you know, can you go out here and be competitive against Oklahoma City, which might be one of the best regular season teams we've seen in the last 5-6 years in the NBA?
And it's like, I mean, oh, well, hey, man, there's an either. Argument that they're like one of the 5 best of all time.
Absolutely. And so it's like, you set him up to fail. Like, if he's your answer, man, I almost think, like, you know, it's going to be really hard to sell him. It's going to be really, really hard to sell him to the fan base unless they miraculously win these next two games in this series, you know, and show some sort of fight that's been missing. And I almost think, like, it's the NBA. It's not college football or college basketball where the head coach really means a whole lot. But, like, just to, like, give a fresh narrative to the fan base. Give the fans something to chew on or something to be excited about. Maybe a head coach could kind of serve that purpose. Because, man, I just don't think Isolo's going to light that fire or change the narrative at all if they decide to go with him in the full-time job.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I want to be very clear. I don't think I've seen anything definitively one way or the other. I haven't seen anything that says I'm out on him, and I haven't seen anything that says, yeah, for sure. If they – okay, let's get drunk for a little bit. You ready?
Yep.
Let's say that this plays out like the Spurs series did in 2017. Did you cover that one?
No. Are you thinking the 2016 one when they played like Chris Anderson and Jordan Farmar and
so I'm
Matt
thinking
Barnes?
I'm thinking of the last time with Mike and Mark where they played twice in San Antonio to start the series, got popped.
Came back and won.
They came back. They put Z-Bo back in the starting lineup, and it was like the turn back the clock. Everybody got in their feels because Z-Bo was awesome. And then Game 4 was truly one of the best basketball games I've ever been at.
That was 2017. That was the last hurrah of the Core 4. Yeah.
And that was Kawhi and Conley going back and forth, and Mark was awesome. I think Mark hit the game winner. But then they lose in 6. They went back to San Antonio, got popped again, and then they lost in Game 6. Let's get a little bit drunk and say that the series plays out like that, where they're going to sneak up and win these next two somehow, some way. Does that create a situation where you would believe in Isolo?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's all
is
I
that
need,
dangerous?
Man.
I guess this is my question, because you and I both, I think you're with me of the worst thing you can do is give the interim in college football. Give the interim to somebody that's like good enough to win 5 games and you end up giving him the job.
Well, it's like Rodney Terry in Texas basketball recently. Like he just took the reins from Chris Beard's roster to let him do an Elite Eight. Now it's like, I guess we got to hire the guy, you know? I mean, come on, dude. Like to your point, like you're saying the Grizzlies fans are just looking for hope.
Yes.
If you beat the Thunder 2 games in a row, then all of a sudden, I mean, the narrative shifts completely.
Yeah. But if you put that on a multiplier, that's like, that's at least a full series win in another playoff era.
Yeah, because think about it. Like, then you're going into Game 5, like, amped up, thinking, okay, we got a shot, right? It's just...
We're not dead yet!
Right.
I didn't hear no bell!
Meanwhile, the other side of that is you just go out there and you lose 2 more games by double digits. This thing is over in a matter of days.
Right.
Where's the hope? Where's the source of inspiration? If you're a season ticket rep, What are you saying? What are you saying when you pick up the phone to call?
Please
and say, hey, you ready to renew? And oh, by the way, it's going to be 10% more, right? Like what's your pitch? Like how do you spin it? Like I mean, it's just tough.
I mean, I think your pitch has to be. I mean, it's Ja. I mean, I will say, I know maybe the numbers are not eye popping, and I don't know how you feel, but I have the single biggest thing that I've actually taken out of this series, it was a reminder to me of, despite kind of the up and down nature of Ja this year, and really, let's be real, like the last couple of years, when he is in the playoffs, you're reminded, like, it's not too big for him. Like, there are some guys, like, I don't know if you can definitively say the opposite for Jaren. Like,
yeah, but he can't do it himself.
What I am saying is, I had wondered, particularly when you think of like what gave him problems this year, the fact that he's not really adjusted to how the game's being officiated, particularly inside where they're allowing more contact. In the playoffs, it's a lot more swallow the whistle. And so I was curious to see like how would this go. Again, his numbers are not eye-popping, but if you're watching the games, you're still like there were times on in game 2 where I was like, he's the best guy on the floor, and the MVP was on the floor.
Yeah, I've also come to realize that for as great of a screen setter as Zach, it always comes back to Zach Edey for me, man. I'm sorry. Like when we talk,
I'm gonna start calling you Matt Moore.
I mean,
Harwood Paroxysm 2.0.
Wait, is he anti?
Oh yeah, he makes you look like you like Edey.
See, I try to be fair.
No,
like,
I'm not. But I do think it's fair to say this. This was a bad series for Edie from a matchup perspective.
Well, and think about it. Like, when Ja's on the floor, he thrives at getting to the paint. Like, the Grizzlies' offense is at its best when Ja Morant is getting paint touches and can get to the rim and finish. Well, the thing that's going to keep Ja Morant from getting to the rim and finishing is having a non-shooting big who is clogging the floor. And that's what Zach Edey is, and by necessity,
hold on,
he's
George. What did Zach shoot from three? I think he shot like 37%.
Yeah, how many attempts? How realistic?
Cobb, what is the rule of this show? Rule number one: don't tell these story. Tell your story. 37%.
Tell your story. I think he took what 25 threes maybe this season.
I think he was
18 of 52. 18 of 52. Zach Edey.
And how many games?
I mean, 66, so less than one a game. Okay. So, honestly, though, more than I thought. But, however, my point is, defenses are not respecting that.
No.
Like, they'll let him shoot it.
They're, by all means, big fella.
Man, you just flash back to Ja's rookie season, and a lot of times they're closing lineups, Jaren would be at the five. And, like, when he threw down that ridiculous opposite direction dunk against Aaron Baines in Phoenix, one of the best dunks I've ever seen in person, the whole premise of that set was to clear the floor, clear the lane. Jaren, go to the corner and clear the lane, you know, surround the paint with four shooters, and then let Ja go hunt a bucket. Or if they collapse down, you kick it to a shooter. And, like, Zach Edey does some positive things, but he clogs the paint, which is where Ja Morant has to thrive, especially as it's become more and more apparent over the course of his career that he's not a great three-point shooter. So,
yeah, but, I mean, I think you have to – I think the biggest question for me moving forward with this team structurally is, are Ja and Jaren just offensively water and oil?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think that's a really good point.
Because I think it's fair to say this at this point. I just don't believe that Jaren's ever going to become a good, an above average screen setter. And because Mark and I were kind of talking about this last night, can you think of, when we think of all the good screen setters, almost all of them have mass. Like, even, like, as much as I hate him, Draymond's at least a wide dude. Like, he's not the tallest dude, but he's a wide, he's got mass. He's got some junk in that trunk, too.
Kyle Lowry.
Lowry, well, so we were going through. Is Gobert the answer? Like, we were thinking, is Gobert, because...
Like, the comp for Jaren?
No, I'm trying to think of, like, Slenderman screen setters that are actually good.
For a thinner guy.
Synergy, can you look up, like, isn't there, like, some way to break down, like, points scored off of screens?
Oh, yeah. I can find that.
Can you find me?
You have Cobb in his bag.
Yeah.
Right now.
Well, this is Cobb. You're now experiencing like why I had to have your True Media account, because sometimes like I'll just get going.
Oh, hey, bad news. They are getting serious about multi-factor authentication on Synergy. So it's a no.
Yeah, I got like, your cell phone number.
Yeah, that's it. There you go. Wow.
I might see if I can wire you into my whatever iMessages too. Like we'll have split phones. Yeah. Well, joint cell phone authentication, but like I was thinking like, because Porzingis kind of.
My thing with Porzingis is that he's actually a good shooter as well. So
you have to honor it
exactly,
because part of it is like I do respect NBA defenders, and the deal is if you don't have mass, these guys are so athletic. They're either going to be able to get underneath it or they're going to be able to get on top of it. And if you don't have mass, you can't get enough of them to where you get enough space to like actually utilize the screen. And so the question that I have is, if I accept that Jaren is never going to be an above average screen setter, does that mean that there's always going to be a problem with him and Ja offensively? Because I don't think it's any coincidence that as the Grizzlies have moved back to the high pick and roll with Ja getting downhill, it makes sense to me that Jaren's not thriving offensively, because it's a lot of Jaren standing around in the corner. And you could tell in the third quarter They tried to kind of get him going. And I think I personally thought it was a Grizzlies decision. I didn't think it was Alex Caruso moved Jaren out to the three-point line. I think, because if you look at it in the first half, they were kind of posting up Jaren when Caruso was on him. Right. And they would just, to your point, the traffic in the paint. As soon as Jaren would get the ball in the post, they collapse. There's double teams, triple teams coming. They knock the ball away. So what I thought their adjustment was get Jaren the ball further away from the basket, let him go one-on-one, and they started to have a little bit of success. It wasn't amazing, but it was more success than we had seen in the previous six quarters.
Yes. So some of the synergy data is actually interesting on Jaren as the role guy in the pick and roll. First off, it's rarely happened. I mean, Synergy's logged 9 possessions this season where Jaren was the role guy after setting a pick. That's very, very few. Meanwhile, he's been the pop guy like 53 times.
Yeah.
So that, you know, he'll obviously set the screen and then pop to the 3-point line because he's a big who can shoot. But they don't really like operate with him rolling to the basket at all. Would it be worth trying that again at some point? Maybe. Because if you're going to have Jaren on the floor...
Is there such thing as a bad idea right now?
Honestly, no. But the thing is, if you're going to have Jaren on the floor and you're going to play another big, and that big is not a shooter, like you're just going to have a clogged floor. I mean, there's just no way around that. So, yeah, I don't know. It's just... There's nothing easy. Like, there's no go-to option. It felt like during the regular season, you could always kind of feed the ball to Jaren at the elbow and just let him go to work. Or even at the top of the key, and he would somehow get to that finishing left hand somewhere in the paint. It's so much harder in the playoffs, and the physicality that he plays with, or the lack thereof, it makes every look that much more difficult. It's this is where, like, you know, people talk about Desmond Bane's short arms. Like, this is where it hurts him in the playoffs, where every closeout is just a little bit more intense. And then it's like with Ja, some of the lack of physicality starts to hurt him at the rim and in the paint in the playoffs. It's like the little weaknesses or the little blemishes on a guy, and in this case, each of the big three really get magnified in a series like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's, to me, like, to bookend it, I think that is the real question that they're going to have to explore this season, which is, or this offseason, are these three guys good enough?
On their own, I think yes. I think all three of them are great players, but are they the three, do they work together? Like,
no, I think that's, because I do think, and then like, but the part of the problem though is, would we be feeling like this if they were playing? Like, I think part of the problem is it's the Thunder. The Thunder are so long. Like I said this yesterday, Cop, when you're watching these games, the Thunder look like that they're playing with the speed turned up on Madden.
Yeah. Where they, well, just, that's where it comes down to, like, what,
so
they do
much
from
faster.
Here. It's what they do from here, because, I mean, let's say the Thunder end up playing the Nuggets and the Nuggets beat them in 6. Then it's, oh,
oh
my gosh, right? Like, well, you're holding a Clippers ticket, so we'll say,
yeah,
the Clippers,
at least,
beat them,
yeah, at least I'll have that hedge. All right, let's take a quick break. When we come back, Eric's going to join the program. We'll talk with Eric Hasselstein next, right here on Jeffrey Wright and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
That music means we welcome to the program the Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. He, of course, is Eric Hasselstein. Pregame tonight, 8 p.m., 8:30 start. And tip for Eric. Eric, was the third quarter something the Grizzlies could actually build on?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think you found some success. The last three quarters, their struggles in game two were from first quarter. That's where they kind of fell behind. They couldn't make a shot to start. And it's kind of been the entire series, to be honest, but the second, third, and, you know, the fourth, you kind of toss out because you put different people in there. But overall, I mean, the second and third were probably two of their better quarters. I mean, they were right there with them and matched runs, got it to 8. I mean, you just can't dig a hole against this team. And you look at the numbers, Jeffrey, and I'm sure you have, but they're shooting 87% from the line and 47% basically from the field, while you're shooting 39% and 24.6 from three. And free throws are fine, but you're only averaging, you know, 17.5 assists, and you're averaging 19.5 turnovers. That can't be the number. Those can't be the numbers. They're 28.5 assists and 11.5 turnovers. They're blocking shots. They're getting 10 steals in the first two games. It's just very skewed. When none of your big three are shooting over 40%, it's hard to win. It's really hard to win. But they were historically good for a reason. They're awesome. And I chuckled whenever people were talking about this team in the national media. Like, oh, maybe it's the Warriors now with Jimmy Butler. Or maybe it's the Lakers with Luka Doncic. I'm like, are you people insane? Like, these numbers equate to championships when teams have them. And they're not a fluke. And everybody's like, oh, well, they haven't done it before. Okay, well, the Bulls hadn't done it before. They had gone through a playoff run. You know, the other great teams hadn't done it before. They're looking at chronological age, but they played so much time together. Man, they're good. They're intelligent. They brought in veterans and toughness, and you got to match that. They don't stop. You've been an athlete. You know, Cobb understands watching all these things. And Cobb's been an athlete. We've all played sports. When you play a team that just never stops, at some point you just go, man, just give me like 5 seconds.
Yeah, I need a timeout. Can I take a 30 here?
Right. Like, and you watch, you go, and it's a totally different level, obviously. But, like, watch a pickup game somewhere where you go play, and you watch the one guy that keeps going and going and going, and people start getting picked off and frustrated and like, dude, ease up. You know, it's a pickup game. And they're playing like that in the NBA, which you would expect. But even NBA players, like, you get a possession, you just go, all right, let me just catch my breath. They don't let you. They don't let you. They move. They move without the basketball. And that's the one thing I was really trying to focus on. Like, what is it? What makes them so good? Because these aren't all number one draft pick, superstar level players. They don't have five guys on the all-star team. One, the first thing they do is they all accept their roles. And Lionel Hollins once told me, and I've said it on this show, the most poignant thing he ever said to me in our talks, the hardest thing a head coach has to do is get guys to accept their roles. Because none of these guys were role players in high school or college. They were the studs. They were the guys. They were the ones who made it happen. Maybe the one guy on their team that wasn't a stud when he first started in college was Alex Caruso. But there's a great story about him from someone that was watching Texas A&M, and the game was a whitewash, and Caruso was a freshman, and he went out there playing like it was a one-point game in the national title game. And a pro scout said, who is that guy? And they said, Alex Caruso. And they're like, he's like, he needs to be playing more if he plays like that. Doesn't matter the level of competition, doesn't care. And so you got, you know, all these guys put together. Your highest draft pick is Chet Holmgren. With all the picks they've had, it's Chet Holmgren. But your best two players are Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who you got in a trade, and Jalen Williams, who you took out of Santa Clara, and everybody went, who? Like, yeah, if you don't watch late-night college basketball, you've never seen this long, athletic wing that just seems to make every mid-range shot he takes. And then you just sprinkle in other guys alongside him. When they signed Hartenstein, I think I texted you and said, that's a problem.
Yeah.
That's a
well, no, because you're like problem. The only. He's like you're like their only weakness was they can't rebound, and he's like they just fixed that.
They fixed that in one pen signature, and that was a guy literally 3 years ago. You know, when the Grizzlies were going, I'm like, if you could get that guy, in case anything doesn't, you know, you can't extend Steven, that's the guy you target. I saw that when he was with Houston, and like just came in as a rookie. Nobody ever heard of the guy. Nobody ever heard of him. He was born in Eugene. He played in Germany. And this guy's coming in, and I'm like, who is this dude? You thought it was just some guy they found on a scrap pile. And then you see him with New York. I'm like, that's the guy you go get. That's the guy you dump the bank to next year. And I said that in New York, and I said, you know, without saying it, because I'm like, this guy is going to get paid in the offseason, and I hope, you know, there's certain teams involved in that discussion, because we can't, obviously, they consider that tampering a little bit. That was, and you just didn't have it. You didn't have the ability to go do it. And the Thunder did, because they kept trading for picks, and all the criticism Sam Presti took, you know, hey, you can't keep trading picks for more picks and not eventually start picking players. Well, their motto was, we're not going to pick the wrong players. We would rather keep acquiring guys and developing the guys we have and find guys that fit what we do. And it's kind of like what Denver did after the first television contract increase. Everybody went out and signed guys like Luol Deng and Timofey Mozgov to 4 years, $72 million contracts. The Lakers did both of those. And other guys got big, big money. And Denver said, well, we went after the guys we wanted. We didn't get them. And the next year, they had a bag of money, and nobody did except them. And they went and got Paul Millsap, and that changed their franchise. Brought in a veteran, brought the young guys along. Even though he didn't stay long term, his presence there taught them how to win. And it's a motto I think gets lost sometimes in front offices. Like, you feel like you have to make a move. You feel like you have to go get somebody. Show your fan base we're trying. No, you don't. You have to go get the right guys. And if the right guy's not out there, you stand on the podium and you go, hey, look, I know it looks like we're standing pat. We didn't stand pat. We went after guys. We didn't get them. Sometimes that's life. We're not just going to waste money on guys that don't fit what we do just to say we did something. And they have lived by that motto. You want to know a crazy thing? I was just looking at this in my game notes. If I asked you right now who has the better winning percentage, Taylor Jenkins or Mark Dagamon, who would you think?
The only reason I know this is because you're telling me it's got to be Taylor.
Taylor Jenkins. Taylor Jenkins.
Because how many years was Mark there before?
This is his fifth year.
Yeah, so I mean, what? So basically three of those 5 years, they weren't all that competitive.
And what did they do? They stuck with him. They said, we believe in what you're doing. I used to, you know, and I don't know Sam Presti. I've never met Sam Presti. I know how he is. He's very closed off to, you know, people outside the offices and outside the coach's locker room. Like, I know broadcasters work for him. He's like, yeah, you don't really talk to him much. But if you just keep your head down and do your job, he'll let you go. You know, he'll let you do your job. When you start trying to get involved in their business, that's when he gets a little testy. That man, after game two, walked out into the parking lot because our team buses are right there. And there were fans that stood around that were just cheering and chanting his name. And I'm like, 2 years ago, people were talking about what a buffoon this guy is for not getting anything for these picks. And I'm like, turns out he had a really good plan. It was really smart. And it let them do what they want to do. So just not to say they're not beatable. They are beatable. They are beatable. The Grizzlies had them down by, you know, one in a regular season game when they played everybody and then a bad run. The thing you cannot do against a team at this level is make little mistakes. And so, as I said, I was watching, going back to that, what are they doing? They don't stop moving. What are the Grizzlies not doing?
Moving.
They're not setting as many screens off the ball. They're not back picking for a guy like Luke Kennard when the ball's on the opposite floor so he can run through two screens to catch on the wing and get an open three. You're trying to run with maybe a half a screen, trying to chase to the, like, run to the ball when most guys in the NBA are like, all right, I'll let you go catch it and I'm going to close out. They don't even want you to catch it. And they try to do that. And they just keep playing at breakneck speed, all out energy. They don't play the fastest pace, but they leave every ounce of energy out there because they know they got somebody behind them that'll give them a break if they need it. And so I think the Grizzlies can take a page out of that book. And the other factor, and I don't think it's fair that nobody brings this up, you are missing two of your top eight guys. I would just like 1 year in the postseason for the Grizzlies to have a clean bill of health. Not having Brandon Clark and not having Jalen Wells as a series is a massive impact. It's a massive impact. And they're healthy. They're missing nobody. They're missing three guys that are two-way guys, and they're not eligible anyway. That's it. And so you caught a bad draw. If you had beaten Golden State, you would have caught Houston. I heard, you know, your question today, would they be competitive? Yeah, they'd be competitive with Houston. Hell, they should have won two of the games they lost against Houston. But little mistakes, and they've got to eliminate those little mistakes against a team of this caliber because they punish you for every one you make.
Eric, you've seen the Thunder now six times in person this season. You'll see them for a seventh time tonight. Mm-hmm. As far as their NBA championship bona fides, like, how do you see them matching up potentially, at least with a Boston, with a team that has those guys who have won a title? I mean, are they there? Like, are they yes. good enough to win this whole thing?
Yes, I think they should be the favorites, and it's not close. I think Boston has a tremendous strategy going right now, and they have guys that know how to do it, and they have size. They're the one team to me that has the size to go with OKC because Holiday is 6'4", White is 6'4", and they're elite defenders on the perimeter. And then you have Tatum and Brown and Porzingis and Horford. And Pritchard's the one guy that comes in that's not as big, but he's just a bulldog and obviously rightfully deserved the sixth man of the year. You go over to Cleveland. They've got size in the front court, and adding DeAndre Hunter was huge. But in the back court, they're going to have to figure out what they're going to do. You know, Dort is 6'4". Caruso's 6'4". Jason Wallace is the one guy under that size. But when you can throw Hartenstein and Holmgren, that negates that advantage Cleveland has had. And I think those are your four best teams. Now, those are the two best in the East. Now, if you go to the West, can they handle the two if the Lakers were to advance past Minnesota? Can they handle Doncic and LeBron? Well, it'll be tough. But who do they have down low to stop Hartenstein from creating second-chance opportunities or Holmgren to protect the rim? Then you go over to Denver. Yeah, you got Jokic, you got Murray. And Aaron Gordon's a good defender. But again, you got more size and you have more depth. You get into the other teams. I don't see why people aren't touting this more as it's not theirs to win, it's theirs to lose. Like, they are the leader right now in the clubhouse. You know, and I think Boston's the one team that I'd look forward to that series. I would watch every minute of every game because I think those have been the two elite teams. And if it would have been Cleveland, I'd still watch every minute of every game. And I'll watch every minute of the finals, but I'm going to be excited for it. If it's not them, then something happened that, you know, somebody figured something out. And I'm not sure what that something is, because you watch the way they execute on offense and the way they move the ball, it's hard for me to see what all of a sudden is just going to stop. They didn't win 68 games because they were just okay. They were elite. I mean, they had a chance to win 70 and had a bad night, and they said, okay, well, we can't get to 70 now, so let's give some guys some rest. And they lost a couple down the stretch. But they've just been good all year long, and that's the way it is. They've got a really, really high-level team, and you're the 8 seed. You do the 1 seed. They were 1 for a reason.
Eric, why do you think the Grizzlies can't take care of the basketball this year?
I wish I had the answer, man. I just think what I said on the air, and I think this is fair without being too critical. I think they're a lot of times they'll just go, they'll make a pass, and they're not thinking this pass can't get picked off. They're like, okay, this is just going to get through, or a rebound. I go to the play in game 2. John Conchar's underneath. His man has vacated the area and gone down to get on defense. So he goes up. All right, I'm not boxing anybody out. He left. Problem was, Isaiah Joe was on the sideline. His man, whoever's guarding him, didn't box him out. He sees the ball go in the air, and he sprints from the sideline, and Conchar doesn't know he's coming. And he taps it out of his hands. And you're like, you got to secure that rebound. I just think I don't want to say the intensity, because it's not like they're just – look, I know what everybody thinks. I know enough about this team and have seen enough minutes of this team. I don't think they're just laying down. I think they're getting beaten by a better team, and sometimes emotions get to you. And they get a little careless with the basketball. They don't have that steady hand in terms of a backup playmaker that they once had in Tyus Jones, and that was a luxury. That was a guy that when he came in, you didn't give the ball away. When you're turning it over – nearly 20 times a night, and 10 of those are steals, which are live ball turnovers, that's a problem. I think they just come down sometimes, and they haven't been ready for where the double teams are coming, whether that's Oklahoma City scheming in a way they weren't prepared for, or whether that's Oklahoma City playing with an aggression they weren't prepared for. They're the more aggressive team, and you've got to match that energy. You can't assume anything against this team. You just can't. And going into the lane around a high ball screen, and then all of a sudden you're triple teamed and you leave your feet and you're like, well, I can't get this shot away. It's going to get blocked. I got to pass. That's not going to work either. You've got to be instinctual and not reactive. And it seems like at times in this series, the Thunder's defense has made them reactive rather than instinctual. You look at that second quarter, one of the things that was successful was they didn't hesitate. They went and then they took the shot. And to me, I would be preaching, you go and you're committed to taking that shot, you take the shot. Because I can promise you, if you don't take the shot and try to pass between three guys, it's probably getting intercepted. I would rather see the shot blocked and say, okay, we now know we either got to take a step back on that shot, or you've got to hesitate and go all the way to the rim, or don't pick up the ball with nowhere to go. It's little things. It's just little things that they capitalize on, and it's been a problem all year. I think the lack of a playmaking backup point guard has hurt. And it's nothing against Scotty. Scotty has made himself into a viable NBA player, where just a couple years ago, he was barely getting minutes with the Lakers G League squad.
Until October 15th, he was still on a two-way.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was with the Lakers, the South Bay Lakers, and not really, he wasn't getting any minutes with the big club. And they just said, all right, we'll let you go. And the Grizzlies picked him up out of necessity. And I think, you know, what you saw last year, guys like Vince Williams, guys like T.J. Jackson, guys like Scottie Pippen, made the most of that opportunity to play and put up numbers. But did they develop their, you know, other than just, hey, we got to have somebody out there? And the development also comes with the understanding that my role next year is not going to be the same. But I've got to figure out what that role is and do the most with it what I can. And again, I don't think Scotty, from my recollection of Vanderbilt Cobb, you can tell me if I'm wrong or right, I don't think he's ever been a true point guard that could score.
No, he was a two guard
who could score, and sometimes had to have the ball in his hands. And this is the ultimate level, and it's the hardest position at the ultimate level is to play NBA point guard. It is, man, it is tough. It is tougher than most people want to admit, because we see greatness there all the time, but you don't realize how hard that is. I mean, I when I had my show, I used to tell the story all the time. The Sonics wanted to run Gary Payton out of town after 1 year because he got in the league and he was like, oh my gosh, these guys are amazing. And they're like, hey, pump the brakes, give the kid a chance. He's a rookie. It was 3 years of college at Oregon State. And some of these guys don't have that. Scotty obviously did. But it's a hard position to step right in and dominate. Think about how many high-level point guards have come in the NBA and you think, okay, that kid's going to be awesome. And they don't do a thing. They're just a guy. And you thought they were going to be studs. If that position can eat you alive. It's like quarterback. It's like shortstop. You get up to the bigs, and that ball's coming a little bit harder in that 6'5 hole. You get into the NFL, and that edge rusher's getting on you a split-second faster. And if your release isn't quick enough, you're not going to see the completion because you're not going to see anything but the sky from the flat of your back. So it's a big difference. And I think that's one of the biggest things with this roster that they weren't able to do. And asking Desmond Bane to learn that position is a lot. And he's had his moments where he's had great moments.